Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
My name is Leo Brody. I'm the practitioner for today, along with Kalish and Joanne. And my ancestors hail from Ireland, and my pronouns are he and him. So I'm going to do an open prayer, an opening prayer for you, for us all. And we know that we're all one. We are all from the same source. We are all one in spirit. We are all brothers and sisters because we are from the same source. And oneness is what we are. Oneness is what we can remember that we are, because we are all connected. And we're all connected to source. Some call it God, but it is that one source from which everything came and from which we are all a part of. And we remain always a part of that source. We can lean into that source knowing that it is there supporting us in every breath, in every moment. And that's true for me. It's true for you all. It's true for everyone. It's good to remember that once in a while. And so, knowing that we're all connected and we're one, we now move into a beautiful service. And join me in saying, and so it is.
So I have a big question for you today. What would the world look like if love actually won? And I know using the word won or win, love wins, it brings up the connotation of there's a win and there's a lose. But whenever love wins, that means everybody wins. So there is no lose in that scenario. And I don't mean this as a slogan. I mean this like in everyday world, everyday thinking about our lives. Like, what would love winning in the grocery store look like? Or in the board meeting? Or when you're conversing online? What would love winning in politics look like? What would it look like in the economy? I mean, these are deep questions. And it can be the most challenging and yet the most transformative experience if we really take that question on. I think about justice. People talk about justice, and for me, sometimes the word justice brings up the kind of feeling, like, I want justice for this. But what if love brought a sense of justice that provided a world that works for everyone? What if we created, instead of fighting from the outside, what if we created from the inside out, building together a world that worked for everyone, with love leading the way? When I think about love leading the way, my heart opens. I feel more expansive. I feel open to different possibilities or potentialities. I feel like, what if we created something together? Or what if in my daily life I utilized this concept of love winning as my own methodology to be in life. And I just want to be very clear, when I'm talking about love winning, I'm not talking about allowing myself to be a doormat. Because I think people think, oh, well, the loving thing to do is to let them be their bad behavioral selves. And that is not what love winning is being. You know, Brené Brown said that the most loving people are also the most boundary people. Which means that love can be taking a stand in a way that's supportive to yourself, to your friends, to your family. It means creating a world where justice sees people as humans, where forgiveness is the norm, and yet there's accountability. In our teaching, we talk about the one consciousness, the infinite creative intelligence that underlies all reality. And this one consciousness is not reacting to reality, it's creating it. And whenever I align with that creation, things in my life start working really well. And I can tell you that another synonym for God or Source or the infinite creative intelligence of it all is love. A lot of Christians a long time ago, I think maybe it was like 20 years ago, 25 years ago, they had this big slogan of like, what would Jesus do? It was WWJD, and people like wore them bracelets, and they were asking the questions, what would Jesus do? And my response was actually, what would love do? What would love do? Because that would inform me on my own actions. What would the most loving thing to myself be? What would the most loving thing in this situation be? What would love do? So good morning, everybody. I'm Reverend Abigail. If you're here for the first time, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. And I recognize that I forgot to say my pronouns are she and her. And the reason why I say my pronouns is because we're in a welcoming community. And that's a tip off for people who may not have a she, her pronoun, or the assumptions may be made about what their identity is. And it means that you're safe here. And I honor you here. You know, one thing that we did this month, we've been asking that question, what if, which I just asked a bunch of what if questions. If you didn't catch that, that's our monthly theme. We're what ifing in this month. And the first week of the month, I talked about my thermostat, how I was like, I was going around and I kept getting cold and I turned the thermostat up and then I'd go back to the thermostat and it would be cold again. And I realized there was like an underlying set point in the thermostat that was, you know, like its default. It was defaulting to the colder temperature, even though I wanted to turn it up, and then it would just like default back to the cold temperature. And I was using that as a metaphor for our own belief systems, that oftentimes we have belief systems that hold us in a holding pattern, and we don't realize that they're operating in the background. And the only way to change that is to bring it to life, like, oh my gosh, there is that operating pattern in my background. Now that I see that it's there, I can shift and change it. So we're bringing stuff to light, to awareness, ways of being that maybe are not serving us. And that can happen on an individual and a collective level. And then the second week, Reverend Dawn talked about the power of decision and that we can ask the questions, but we also need to step forward into alignment with what that might look like and making a decision every day on being in alignment with what we would love for this world to create, and making that decision. And last week, I talked about the power of shared vision, shared imagination, you know, creating something together. And this week, my theme is a world of pure imagination. A world of pure imagination. And I was thinking about this, like, it's great to imagine an amazing world, very important, super important to imagine it. But it's also kind of like, imagine you have a painting that's the most gorgeous painting in the entire world, beautiful, stunning. It elicits connection and love and beauty, but it's in a locked room. It's in a locked room. What good is it doing there? So it actually needs to be brought out into the light where people can see it. And the way that we can bring that world of pure imagination or that painting, that beautiful vision that we might have, the way we do it is through connecting with each other and being present. And so I'm going to ask you to do something uncomfortable. I just want to warn you in advance. Some people who are new are like, oh gosh, why did I walk in here? I am, and I have something for you, for those of you who are online too. And so I'm going to tell you first what you're going to do, and there's two options. There's the really uncomfortable option, and then there's the not as uncomfortable option, okay? And so for those of you online who are alone, you will do the not as uncomfortable option, and those of you in the room will have the choice between the two options. So, option one is you're going to look at somebody. You're going to look at somebody. Option two is you're going to look at yourself. Okay? So, now, and for those of you who are online, since you're probably at home alone, which you may or may not be, you can look at yourself. Or if you're hanging out with your partner or something, then I invite you to look at that person. So go ahead, do it now, look at somebody in the room. All right. Okay, here's the deal. What I want you to do without looking at, while you're looking at this person, let yourself notice who they are. You don't have to say anything to them. Just notice them. The person in front of you has probably loved someone, has probably been afraid. Maybe they've experienced the death of a loved one recently, or an illness. Maybe they've experienced a divorce. Maybe they've experienced great joy recently. Something new that's birthed in their life. And I want you to, with your eyes, just acknowledge them. Acknowledge that their hands have held people. They have built things. And as you acknowledge them with your eyes, I want you to also see what an amazing presence they are. Just see them as the presence of the divine. Now breathe it in. Breathe it out. And then thank them. So here's the interesting thing about that. Stephen Porges does research on attention. And he shows that this quality of unhurried attention on being present with another human or present with our own selves, acknowledging who we are, or acknowledging the person in front of us, it activates the branch of your nervous system that's responsible for you actually feeling safe, creative, and connected in the world. And you can even do it alone, looking at yourself, giving yourself that unhurried attention. See, presence is not passive. Presence is transformative. being present with people, and it all starts with a look. What happened is not separate from a world of pure imagination. What happened just now is where it starts, is that presence. This is where a new world begins. And the early 20th century Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, he was living through a collapse of a terrible time in our world's history, the time of World War I. He watched the Dreyfus Affair expose how a society turns its own citizens into enemies. He noticed the systemic reduction of human beings into categories, numbers, problems to be managed. People became things, issues. Dehumanization was happening. And he was wondering, how can transformation actually happen in a world like this? How can it happen? And he came up with a philosophy or an idea. He said, you know, we have the opportunity to live in two fundamentally different modes. The first mode is I-it, is what he called it. And the second mode is I-thou. So the I-it mode, this happens in the morning if you're going to the coffee shop and the barista making your coffee is taking a long time and you're really annoyed with them. This is the I-it. Why doesn't that person do that thing? The I-it mode might be a difficult relative that's just a problem you need to manage. The I-it mode might be you just scrolling past things on your phone and getting annoyed. People are part of the scenery. But the I-thou mode is a different type of thing. Buber says it's that moment of genuine meeting. And he said something new comes into existence in the space in between. It doesn't happen in you, it doesn't happen in them, it happens in the in-between. He called it the charge space that crackles to life when two people stop managing each other and actually encounter each other. He said, when I confront a human being as my thou and speak the basic word, I thou, to them, then they are not a thing amongst things happening in my life. They are present, and I am present. See, this is how the world, our most luminous vision of a compassionate world, can happen. It does not happen when I'm scrolling past somebody else's pain. It is the question of, if consciousness is always creating, that is its nature, consciousness, life, source, energy, love, what am I doing with my awareness and what am I bringing through to this world at this time? So where do you hold a beautiful vision, but you're moving too fast through life to actually touch it? Are you willing to pause and acknowledge it? And acknowledge the person in front of you, next to you, behind you, around you. And just be with them. See, the beingness is the beauty. It's like when you were looking at that person, you didn't know their history. You didn't know their skill set. You didn't know their past. You were just being. And that's all that mattered, is that person in that moment. In South Africa in 1994, apartheid ended. And what do you do with that? In that world where they had 23 years of not just state-sanctioned racism, but it was torture, systemic categorization of different castes and people and how they fit. And whenever all of that was ended, it's like, how do you heal that? How do you heal that? So Desmond Tutu, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, he created the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And this was where he had this idea of having, instead of the perpetrators going up to a judge, the perpetrators sat in a circle of their victims. And they were required to tell the truth, all of it, and the survivors would be required to see them. Now, it wasn't a perfect system, but something happened that seemed impossible. The survivors had to see their torturers not as monsters, but as actual humans, as people too. And there's this one story where there was torturer Jeffrey Benzin, and he sat across from one of the survivors, Tony Yangini, who asked, "What kind of man are you? What kind of man are you when you can do this to another human being and then go home to your family and just eat dinner?" And there was silence. And then Benzin wept. He said he didn't know. And Yangini, the man who had been tortured by him, witnessed him. Benzin said, "I've been asking myself that same question. And the world transformed because there was a bridge of compassion, of humanity, that happened in that moment. And while the crimes can't be undone, the chasm of separation got closer and connection was made. And that's where the seeming impossible happens. That's where the question of what would it look like if love wins comes into being. Because it comes into being when we witness each other, when we see each other, when we become a place of love for each other, even in our most difficult times. So my challenge for you is to once a day give your unhurried attention to somebody for 2 whole minutes. And to ask yourself that question, what would the world look like if love actually won? I know it would look like you, right here, right now. Let's pray. I'm so grateful to be in the place where my heart is open. And even though I know that in the past, people have done some challenging things to me. But I also know that I've made mistakes too. And so I surrender today into the power of love. I know that love has been here the entire time, inside of me, around me, inside and through each and every person here. And so I give up that idea of judgment, of separation, of not enoughness. And I know that love always says, I am enough, I am deserving, and I am connected. And so in that connection, I raise my awareness to the infinite presence, the great creator itself that is love, expanding in my world. And I know that love goes forth in my day and guides me, directs me, inspires me, motivates me, creates unexpected miracles in my life. And I listen to that guidance. I am led in places maybe I haven't had the courage to go before. But I know that this love is the power of win-win-win, where everybody gets to be seen, supported, appreciated, and loved. Because that's a world that works for everyone. And that's the world that I'm participating in creating now. And for that, I'm grateful. And so it is.